This is a huge issue that's happening right now. Just in preparation for this, I was looking at the American Library Association curates a list every year of the 10 most challenged or most banned books. And their statement there was that between 2021 and 2022, the number of reports of challenged books rose, almost doubled. So we were really seeing this, even now, this real desire to kind of remove materials from the libraries. And so this intellectual freedom value has been to stand up against those, especially because when you look at the list of challenged books, they're often being challenged because they include trans and queer friendly content. There are materials that are for children that include trans or queer characters. The critical race theory, for example, materials are being challenged across libraries, all across in the US, but also here in Canada. And so this value that libraries have to stand up for intellectual freedom is kind of to stand up against those censoring, those kind of movements towards censoring and removing those kind of materials to provide access. So on the one hand, librarians and libraries as a profession really believe strongly in intellectual freedom as a position to enable our collections to actually include material that our communities actually want them to be able to access. And that, as you kind of rightly pointed out, when you have these kind of issues of disinformation, and disinformation, including kind of trans exclusionary material that denies the right that trans people even exist, like this is pretty awful kinds of disinformation, then you're really kind of coming into conflict with, our values are coming into conflict in terms of wanting to have collections that, that we aren't having censoring materials in our collections, but we also kind of want to provide spaces and collections that are welcoming and inclusive, and those things are kind of clashing. And anyway, there's lots more that I can kind of say or draw out about that, but that's kind of where that value is coming from in libraries, and also why we're really experiencing a need to have kind of more of a reckoning about how we kind of approach this real challenge.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you bring up like a kind of a central point there, where like that issue of intellectual freedom, or that driving factor of libraries, is really important around protecting people's access to like important information, inclusive information. And when you look at like this issue more broadly, it's not just an idea of like what is maybe difficult to reckon with in terms of what we have in our collections, but also protecting the materials from censorship. But I guess where I find myself hitting a wall is, I guess I'll give a bit of personal context. I'm a trans person, and I have recently become aware of, within my local library system, some very hateful anti-trans materials circulating in the collection that were kind of brought into the collection through request for materials from the public. And because of this important role that libraries hold with freedom of information, they did purchase the materials and brought them in. But I hit a wall as a former library worker who's aware of this, and also as a trans person who feels very strongly that these materials are dangerous, that I don't know where the solution lies, I guess. I feel like I run into a brick wall every time I try and think of a solution to this kind of conundrum that I think a lot of us are facing in the world of libraries, because it's dangerous to have materials in the collection, in my opinion, personally, that advocate for harm to people. I don't know if there's any solutions that are already kind of being circulated in the world of libraries. It's something that I find myself encountering a lot.
Yeah, I don't want to like monopolize the conversation, but I think I can respond a little bit to your question about solutions. And I just want to say, like, I absolutely hear what you're saying about how, you know, dehumanizing it feels to see that kind of material on a library's shelf or circulating in a library's community. And that's a that is a real reality that we're facing as a library profession in managing. And to me, there are a few, and I think this is something that librarians and other library workers are currently working on, but we need to do more. And to me, I see a few different kind of ways in which we can approach this. And one is the fact that we are always working, part of our professional expertise to curate a collection. And we use a number of criteria to decide what books we add to our collections and what books to remove to our collections. And it looks different for public and academic libraries who have different missions and different communities. But when we're kind of applying different criteria, and that might be kind of what in response to the needs of the community. And we could think about how can we expand that kind of criteria that we're applying both when we're acquiring books and also when we're removing books to see how is disinformation going to affect our communities by having this material in our collection? And what kind of evaluative criteria can we apply when we're making those decisions? And to my mind, that's not censorship. I think that's still in alignment with our values of intellectual freedom. We're just using our professional expertise to curate a collection and applying criteria to help us make collection decisions that are inclusive of the kinds of the communities and the feedback that we receive and the kinds of information about disinformation that we have. And that kind of criteria can help us make those decisions about whether to include it in the first place, for example. And then in alignment with that, I think there are lots of ways that libraries are trying to grapple with the problem of if you have it in your collection or if it's requested in your collection, what can you do to address the fact that there is disinformation in it? And that might look like, how can you provide context for the book in your collection? Whether that's through your online catalog, is there a way to provide some context? Is there a way to shelve it in your collection in a way that, you know, when you go to a collection and you see a book and there's the books around it, how can you kind of classify it in a way that makes it clear that there is disinformation or harmful information in it? I'm thinking a little bit of, talk about Twitter here, but a while ago, Twitter kind of instituted this kind of disinformation thing where if you're sharing a link on Twitter, there's kind of some context setting. If a number of people have reported that there's been disinformation in the link that's being circulated, then a little pop-up will come up and say there have been reports that there's disinformation in this link, so that you have some context going into it. So is there a way that libraries can use the tools that are already available to us, you know, on ourselves? Can we create kind of content that helps to explain the context of this book and let people know that there is disinformation in it? Is there ways that we can do programming, for example, that is deliberately talking about the ways that this book or these kinds of books is circulating disinformation and circulating harm in our community? So I think there's a lot of different things that could be done to really combat this, both from the like criteria perspective, but also from if it is in your collection, how can you mitigate the harm or reduce the harm as much as possible by providing context for it? And there's still a lot that we could do to kind of come up with solutions and ideas for working with this in libraries. And this is, I think there's a lot more that needs to happen. But that's kind of some of the, it's not like a solution, but some of the strategies to try to address this that are, I think, are happening within the library as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to know how, you know, people are working within kind of the restrictions of what libraries can offer around looking at contentious materials and the ways people are trying to make efforts to address where things have gotten difficult. I think what my question is, and I know this is a tricky question because libraries are public spaces, they are spaces for everyone, and that is a really beautiful thing about libraries. But I wonder if there is does anyone here, I guess, feel that there is a moral or ethical responsibility on the part of libraries to take I guess, for lack of a better word, a political stand against hatred and bigotry with this kind of the question around materials.
Yeah, Kira, thank you. And thanks to Chloe for bringing up Twitter as well. Because I think we've all seen with social media, you can kind of draw a direct line, you know, from hate and bigotry to real harm that happens in the real world for queer people. So I think it's the same with libraries. You know, they're not just, you know, in a vacuum. They're not places to get books. They're not paperback blockbusters. They're not only for research. You know, they're community hubs. And, you know, there is an ethical obligation to provide an inclusive space for folks. And when you have hateful material, it doesn't make people feel included. So I agree, Kira, that, yeah, libraries and, you know, especially public institutions have an obligation to follow through with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate you mentioning that, you know, libraries don't exist in a vacuum, something that I've observed even within my own community. And it seems to be just it all seems to be happening at the same time where there are these materials being requested for purchase. And at the same time in my own community, I'm seeing a lot of increase in anti-trans rhetoric. And it seems that there is something happening. And I think that there could be a place of responsibility to public institutions to recognize that there is actually something very concerning kind of percolating in the community, and doing what they can to address that and try and create change around it, which I don't see happening with the inclusion of these types of materials. And it's not only around anti-trans materials that I see this stuff happening. I worked in a library that in their regular kind of nonfiction collection had a copy of Mein Kampf, which was shocking to encounter shelving that book. And I find it a very difficult thing to come to terms with. I know, Julia, I know you've done a lot of work around equity and like creative like writing resources for students at SFU. Have you found, like, on the student end of things, student relation end of things, that there are folks who are kind of struggling to kind of find a way to move forward with, like, writing in, with ethics in mind around this kind of stuff? Is this issue coming up, I guess, for you in your work as well?
It's a very interesting question. And I don't get to work as directly with students anymore as I used to. So I don't know, like, I haven't looked at a lot of students' papers in the last little while. A conversation that we've been having a little bit internally in the Student Learning Commons is, should we be asking students to indicate if there's any, like, sensitive material in a paper that they're asking a tutor to read, or to provide some content notes? Because we put tutors in challenging positions. They arrive not having read the paper, sometimes online, sometimes, like, right face to face with that student, and then they look at the paper, and if there's something in there that's harmful, that's that is inflected by hate, they are just face to face with that in that moment. Or even just, you know, triggering for whatever reason, right? So I think that that's a conversation that we're having a little bit. And you mentioned the idea that libraries are for everyone. I literally have a poster that says that right next to me. Libraries are for everyone. And I think that this is kind of the line that we're trying to figure out, is that how can libraries be for everyone, but not for every position, and not for every thought, and not for every type of experience? How can we say, like, and this is kind of what I come to with my work, how can I say, I would work with any student, but I would not accept any perspective that a student would bring. And I would push back and say, that's actually not an acceptable thing to have in your paper. And you need to think further about that. And you need to consider what the impact of this might be. And I think that that's sort of the challenge of figuring out, how do we want to place these things, intellectual freedom and actual, like, physical safety and well-being and psychological safety and well-being? Like, somebody's right to their own intellectual freedom does not trump other people's right to safety and well-being in a space. And so, like, you can think your thoughts, but you don't have the right to bring them into every space and harm people with them. And so I think that that's kind of, I don't know that I at all answered your question, but I think that that's sort of the line that we're trying to figure out in the Student Learning Commons in particular. And we've been trying to have conversations about like, how do we talk about equity? And sometimes those conversations skew towards like, we're a welcoming place for everyone. And that sounds a lot like neutrality. And I say, no, like, we're not a neutral place. We have to be a space that actually advocates and actually takes a position. And that's really uncomfortable because that's not the position that libraries have had for a long time. It's not the position that universities have had. I also have a quote right in front of me from Ginger Gosnell-Myers, who said, imagine if the university stopped studying things and started advocating for things. And I keep that on my computer because I'm trying to always imagine it. Like, what would my work be like if that was what I was invited to do? And I think that that really shifts this conversation, right? If that was a place, if we had the space, if we were encouraged, as like Chloe mentioned in the beginning, as people with expertise to be advocates, as opposed to being encouraged to be neutral, which is what we typically are encouraged to be, it would be a really different conversation. So I don't get to see students as directly. And I think that sometimes when students are doing this kind of, like, maybe when they're when they are presenting things in their work, because they do, that are harmful. I don't like to use the word problematic because I want to say harmful because that's what it is. I don't think they typically bring it to us, but it has happened. And it is something that is then, we're quite concerned about the position that we put student tutors in when that happens. So those are the kinds of conversations we're having here around that.
It hit home for me when you spoke about like what would happen if we were being put in a place of advocacy instead of neutrality. I feel that very deeply, as somebody who just recently left the world of academia and hopes to get back into it sometime soon. It's very much, we learn a lot about the world and we learn a lot about different things that are happening, but it's a lot of information being inputted and not a lot of effort being put into, okay, now how do we take this information and move forward with it and use it to better our communities or work from an advocacy position? So I really appreciate you bringing that into the conversation, Julia. That's really wonderful. Another question that I've got, and I'm wondering if everyone has something to offer to it, I'd love to hear everyone's opinion on it. For each of you, does it matter how materials are integrated into the collection? And I think where this comes from for me is when things are in like general circulation, it feels different than if something was put specifically in a reference section. So like kind of like even just taking a political stance within like where this piece lives within the library system can be meaningful. And also, you know, there are circumstances in which a harmful piece of material might need to be accessed for a non-harmful reason. I accessed a very anti-trans book in my time at SFU because I wanted to use it to reference in like as I was analyzing a piece of trans theory that was written in response to that anti-trans book. So there are circumstances in which like those materials can still be beneficial to an advocacy kind of standpoint. So is moving the kind of way that these materials circulate enough? Is it a viable option, I guess, for dealing with this?
You know, in regards to harmful material, if you have your purpose in interacting with that material, you know, the harm can be reduced, right? Because you're approaching it from an academic angle. But can you always control how everyone interacts with that material?
No, and I think that that's kind of what I was going to say too, is that like I and the context that I've thought about this more is actually in relation to because I did a degree in Indigenous studies, and so is in relation to dated content that was always harmful, was never appropriate, was never correct, but at a time when it was written, it was more socially acceptable, even though it was always harmful and always racist and incorrect. And extractive and all of those things. And I think that there are a lot of times that people have accessed this content to be able to talk about the harm so that people can understand where the, like, how, why it is harmful, right? Like, we need, sometimes we need to be able to actually reference and say, look, this is, like, it may seem unbelievable to those who are outside of, like, this, you know, fringe community, but these are the real words they're using. Like, we have to see them sometimes. But I think that we, like, kind of what Chloe was saying at the beginning, like, how do we curate that? Like, if you actually put a tag on those things that says disinformation, if you put a tag on those things that says harmful content, if you have a disinformation collection, that's where it lives. It is very clearly signaled that this is not the same as other content that we have. It is very clearly signaled that this is being kept for a particular reason. And Tess, you're totally right. Somebody could still take that book out and do horrible things with it. And I think, so that's the other piece, is that we need to continue doing advocacy work. Like, that's not enough to just tag it and then shelve it there. Like, we still need to take a position. We still need to do advocacy work. But that at least signals something very clear that is distinct from just slipping it onto the shelf anywhere that anybody could access, because that's where it would go, you know, according to the Dewey Decimal System or whatever system it is that we're using. And the reality of the world that we live in, too, is that, like, people don't need libraries to access this content a lot of the time as well. So even if, like, whether we choose to have it or not, access is there. So I think in some ways, even if we don't have something in our collection, the pressure to advocate against the circulation of information that we know is there, that is impacting people, that we should not let ourselves off the hook of doing that work, whether we have a book in our, on our shelves or not.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Julia. I fully agree that we have kind of responsibility, no matter whether the book is in ourselves, to have that kind of, if that's something that we value or that we say that we value, then we have to have a, that has to be part of the work that we do. And, I appreciate, I think what you were saying, and Kira, your original question was kind of a good one, because I think the, where you find the book in the library, if it is in the collection, it really kind of gives it some authority. Like, if it's in the reference collection, there's kind of an authority there that is different from other locations where it might be shelved. Or again, like, if you kind of go to the shelf and you see the other kinds of materials that are around it and you think it's similar to those kinds of materials, because that's how we kind of organize our nonfiction collections, is often by subject. So you kind of see other materials about that. And there's some sort of, like, validity or authority that comes along with seeing the other materials that are there. So I think there is a lot of work and opportunity that we can do to, how can we reclassify this material, or how can we, as Julia said, kind of tag it or assign it with some kind of, in some kind of way to make that signal really clear. And I think there's a lot more work that we in libraries have to do with, in particular with this particular topic, but with a lot of other topics related to disinformation or harm. You know, our collections and our institutions were all kind of developed out of this, you know, culture of whiteness, of colonization, and all of our organization and our systems reflect that now, because we're still in that kind of culture and that system. And we have to actively work against that on so many different vectors. And that is absolutely critical and important work, and really is, it needs to be ongoing as well.
Yeah, this is not a solution finding conversation here. This is a thing that's been going on for a really long time and will definitely continue to be a conversation, and hopefully something that change will happen around as time moves forward. But yeah, it's really interesting to look at this issue within libraries, because like we've talked about already, libraries are supposed to be for everyone, and I think that has a capacity to be an incredibly beautiful thing. They're one of the last, like, true public third spaces that exist out in our world. But it's also important that libraries are safe. And that also is not just about making sure, you know, people are safe from, like, physical violence or what be it, but also safe to exist and be, exist comfortably and be safely in the library. And that relates to the materials that are on the shelves. I think we're kind of hitting the end of our half hour here, but I wanted to say a big thank you to all of you, and also just open up some space if there's anything that was left unsaid that feels really important to be said in this conversation that we've somehow kind of missed. I just wanted to give a moment to give space for that.
I guess I just wanted to say, like, when I read from that CFLA, Canadian Federation of Library Associations, quote that you started off with, it says that that we want to, libraries have a core responsibility to safeguard and facilitate access to constitutionally protected expressions of knowledge, imagination, ideas, and opinion, including those which some individuals and groups consider unconventional, unpopular, or unacceptable. And I mean, I think that part of what we need to do is actually define those things. And like, I think that that's actually quite a queer position for libraries to take, right? To champion the unconventional, the unpopular, the unacceptable. That is really what queerness is about in terms of queering institutions and doing that work. But we need to define what we mean by that and to acknowledge that that does not mean harm and that does not mean hate. And that those are different. And I think that as long as those things are left amorphous and ill-defined, they are open to being appropriated to those who want to create harm and who want to spread hate and disinformation. And so when we leave them very open and flexible, we leave ourselves open to that. And I think that that's kind of the work ahead of us, is to be able to hold that space to say, actually, no, we're not going to get rid of these books that celebrate people and realities. And we are also not going to collect that book that is going to create harm. And here's why. And here's the advocacy that we're doing around that, right? Like, it's multi-pronged in that way. So I just wanted to return to that actual language, because I think that that language is, it could be used in a powerful way, but it needs to be quite clearly articulated what is meant by that, because otherwise it's way too open for people to say intellectual freedom means that I get to spew hatred in any space that I want to be in. And we've heard that argument, and it means that you don't have the right to argue back to me. Like, and it's just, it doesn't make any sense. How can both those things be true? So yeah. I think that that language could be very empowering for us as advocates, but we have to get past the idea that we need to, that we're a neutral place, that being for everyone means neutrality. We have to get past that and understand that that's not what that means.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I think neutrality is a luxury afforded to those who aren't marginalized. And I think, you know, trans comfort and safety needs to be the priority.
Yeah, definitely. And that has been something that libraries need to grapple more with, is that we've long prided ourselves on being neutral and in the sense of being, treating everyone equally. And that's a myth. And we aren't neutral by being kind of, that stance of neutrality is actually a political statement, and it's upholding the status quo, which is harmful. And so we actually have to work against neutrality in our library work and all of our library work, and especially in our collections as well, in order to really dismantle that myth of neutrality.
Thank you to all of you. This last little bit of conversation really, it makes me think of the very famous Desmond Tutu quote, which is like, if you're neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. And I think those are some important words to keep with us when we think about the topics we've discussed today. We're striving for a more just world, and it's important to actually to take action on that. Thank you again for everyone who contributed today. I appreciate you all, and hopefully we'll get a chance to meet again.
Looking for a community who will support you on your academic journey? The Student Learning Commons has got your back. The Student Learning Commons is SFU's Academic Success Center. We provide free workshops, one-on-one consultations, coaching, and online tutoring with a focus on writing, study skills, and academic English. All Student Learning Commons programs and services are available to SFU students and are approved by SFU as providing ethical, academically honest support. Learn more by visiting our locations in the library on all three SFU campuses, or check us out online at learningcommons.sfu.ca.